Thank you all for coming. If everybody could just quiet down for a minute, I think we're going to get started here. Let a few more people come in the room. And if we could just bow our heads in prayer for a moment. Father, we thank you for this glorious day that you've given us. We thank you that we can all come together and study about what you would have us do in the lives of the children that you've entrusted us with. What a great and awesome responsibility that is, Lord. And we thank you for the knowledge that you're giving us, that we can learn from one another and exchange ideas. And we thank you for this time. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. For those of you who did not receive handouts, I apologize. They're going to see if they can get some more runoff. And so at the end of the time, you can probably pick them up at the back door. For those of you who have been to any of my talks, I apologize. I'm going to give a brief history here of the journey that I've been on, and so you're going to get to hear it again. But for those of you who haven't heard it, it might be a helpful thing to you. My husband and I have four sons. We are, as of this year, empty nesters. I have to say it's a very strange place to be, having been involved in classical Christian education for quite some time now. Doesn't mean we're not still involved, but it is different when it's not with your own children anymore. When our sons were young, my oldest son was going to school. We put him into what we considered the best academic environment that we could find. I came from a family of educators. My mother's family owned and ran a boys' private boarding school, and so education was important to my family. And so we chose what we considered. I had gone to a Christian high school and had said that my children would never be in a Christian high school. It didn't go to Christian school. It actually had nothing to do with my not wanting my children to be raised in a Christian environment, but it had to do with the fact that the academics I felt like were so watered down and poor that I would not want to subject my sons to that, particularly because I knew that they needed to be the heads of their household and raise their families. So we chose to put our sons, we were living in Orlando at the time, we put them into a private prep school. My oldest one was in kindergarten, and we got a note home from the school saying that they were going to be reading a book to their class that basically was about sexual abuse. Light went off in our head and went, I don't think so. So, you know, typical involved parent, my husband said, go down to the school, ask the guidance counselor for the book, bring it home, let's read it. We opened it up. 2 pages later, we went, don't think so, and went back to the school. R.C. Sproul is a close friend, and at the time my husband had called him and said, R.C., what do you think we should do? And he said, well, funny you should ask that, but I just got this book across my desk that we've been reading at Ligonier, and it's called Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. I think you should read it. Well, Marlon was out of town at the time, but I journeyed over, got the book from Vesta, his wife, and came home that night, read the entire book, never went to bed, called my husband as early as I dared at about 6 o'clock the next morning and said, honey, we need to start a school. That was the beginning of our journey, and things have never changed. We called Doug the very next day, and that was when it was real easy to get him on the phone at that point. You know, nobody knew about any of these strange things, and said, hey, what is this classical Christian education? Because when I read that book, it was the first time that things came together for me that said, okay, you can have a Christian education that is academically rigorous. This makes sense. That's what we want for our children. And so that's how we started it. As I started then reading, I'm one of these people, I love history. For those of you who don't know me, I absolutely adore history. I read anything so I can get my hands on. So my thing at that point was, okay, I'm going to read everything I can about history in ancient times and medieval times. And so I started reading, and I realized that we have this idea in our minds that medieval or ancient Roman, Greek, whatever it might be, history was very rote and laborious, but it was anything but that. These were some of the most creative teachers that you would ever meet. Now, we have to translate that into our own medium, and that's one of the things that I want to talk to you about today. But they were very creative in the way they thought and taught about children. And one of the reasons that I believe that they were is because God is creative. All we have to do is open up Scripture and see how God cares about the visual arts. God, when He built, you know, when He built something and prescribed it, it was beautiful. When you read about, even if you read about Noah's Ark, it's amazing. I've just been working on something dealing with Noah's Ark. I can't believe the elaborateness of some of the things that were prescribed there. I mean, it's really amazing when you think about it. God cares about beauty. God cares about what we see and what we do. So obviously He wants us to care about what we see and do. Now, I don't know, let me see a show of hands. How many of you are classroom teachers out there? Okay, and how many people are homeschoolers? Wonderful. Okay. You guys all have an awesome responsibility, whether it's your own children or other children that are passing through your doors. One time I asked my husband to spend some time figuring out how much time a teacher spends in a year with a child. And when I got the number back from him, I was just absolutely overwhelmed. 1,080 hours in a school year. If that doesn't frighten you, then you probably should leave right now, because it should. That is an unbelievable responsibility when you think about it. And for some of us, particularly in small classical Christian schools, you're going to have that child for more than 1 year. As I look back over, you know, the teachers that my children had, and some of the times when they were at a classical Christian school, they had some of those teachers for 4 years. Those people impacted their lives. And I can look back and I can tell you which ones impacted them for good and which ones had negative impacts on them. And I know as a teacher, I don't want to be in a position where a child ever looks back or a parent looks back and thinks, that teacher didn't inspire my child. Not only did they not inspire my child, but I actually think they hindered their love of learning. And so that's one of the reasons that I love talking about creative teaching, because I believe that teachers are the ones that inspire children for the rest of their lives. You all actually spend more time with them, more awake hours with these children than their parents do. That is frightening to me when I think about it. And yet it's exciting at the same time. You have the ability to go out and inspire them to possibly be the next president of the United States. And boy, do we need that, guys. So please go out and do that. You spend more time with them than their peers do. You have more of an impact on them, possibly, than their peers do. At least you should. And so we need to take that responsibility very, very seriously. Well, how do we do that? Teachers' attitudes are going to be known by how information is communicated. I was once in a classroom visiting somewhere, and they had asked me to come in and do some work and help at the school. And so I had gone there, and they were having a problem with Shirley Grammer. And I thought, how can you be having a problem with Shirley Grammer? I mean, Shirley Grammer to me is just so easy to use, and it's so much fun once you learn how to do it. And so I had gone into this classroom, and they said the kids were hating it. They weren't enjoying it. And I thought, I don't get this. And I walked in and sat down, and there was a teacher, and it was somebody who had been teaching actually quite some time. And she said, now, boys and girls, we're now going to do our sentence jingle for Mrs. Detweiler. And so she had them stand up and put their hands at their side and said, let's begin. A sentence is complete, complete, complete. And I thought, okay, I now know why these children are boring. So after the children left, you know, I never correct anybody in front. I said, okay, we're gonna practice something. So I had was actually at a faculty meeting. I had all the teachers get together, and I had them stand up. I said, okay, inhibitions out of here, guys. I know why your children do not like Shirley Grammar. We're now going to have some fun. So I had them stand up, and of course, you know, when I teach this, it's a sentence, sentence, sentence. It's complete, complete, complete. And they looked at me like, you've got to be kidding. I said, okay, well, believe me, let's try this tomorrow. So they said, well, we can't do that. And I said, okay, I'll do it. You don't have to do it, but let's see if I'm right. So I get all the children in the room. These are first graders. You know, first graders like to jump up and down and have fun. So first I had to explain to them that it was okay to not have their hands at their side, and it was okay to smile, and it was all those other good things. So I had them with me. I said, okay, boys and girls. Well, it took about three times to get through it before they believed me. Well, when they were done, they wanted to know when we could do the next jingle, okay? So at that point, the teachers were with me, and they said, okay, we believe you. But what I'm telling you is how it's not what you're doing. Nine times out of ten, it's not what you're doing. It's how you're doing it. If you make something to where it's not fun and the children don't think you like it, they're not going to like it. It's real simple. I could read the phone book. If you gave me a phone book and said, this is all you have to do, I actually had this in college. I had this kind of crazy professor and said, here's a phone book. You need to make a day's lessons out of a phone book. You know, everybody looks and thought, okay, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. You know, you can get grammar exercises out of a phone book. You can get handwriting exercises. You can even get history lessons out of a phone book. That's how you need to think. You're stuck somewhere and you only have one book. What could I do with it to make it fun? That will start opening up your mind. Do that at faculty meetings, guys. You will be amazed what you can come up with and how that kind of triggers things for you. But how you communicate, the tone of your voice, your mannerisms. Are there times where you want to be serious? Absolutely. But there are times when you just need to have fun with these children. I know a teacher that I really, really respect. And she had she always, after lunchtime with her third graders, would come back to the classroom and read a book. And they always had a book going all year long. They would sit at their desk, they would put their heads down on their desk, and she would read them a book. And this woman had the ability to read a book in a way that everybody wanted to listen. I mean, other children would like sneak by the door so that they could listen to her read the book. The children would want to hurry up from the playground, I'm not kidding you, to get back to the room to find out what was going on in the book. And one of the reasons is, during the day, she would just make little hints as to what might be happening in the book. And she'd say, now, do you think that they got onto the island or not? I don't know. We'll have to find out at lunchtime. I mean, she just had a way of communicating, but she got that sense of wonder in their heads. And that's what you're trying to do. We're trying to create lifelong learners, okay? If you don't give them a love of learning, if they come out with all this head knowledge, because guys, I've seen this. They come out with all this head knowledge, and they've memorized all this stuff, and they've got it, but they don't have a sense of wonder. You can forget it. It doesn't make any difference. They're not going to go on with it. They're just going to quit. We've got to inspire wonder. So that's what this one teacher did. The other thing that's really important is the view of the children. How many of you have that child in your class? And come hear my next talk on the distracted child, because that's probably the one that's going to get you. But how many of you, raise your hands, have that child that is coming up next year that you just are already dreading because you know what everybody thinks about them? Okay, let's see the hands here. Yeah, okay. Guys, that needs to be your favorite child by the end of the year, okay? Because if they're not, you've probably damaged them for the rest of their life. I mean, I'm just going to say it right there. See, kids know how you feel about them. They're not stupid. They're smarter than we are, and they all know it. That child that you're dreading having, they know you're dreading having them. They probably don't want to be at school anymore because they know you're dreading having them. Children know what we think about them. We have got to take all these children. You know, God's given us all different ways of being, and some children are more difficult than others. It's just the way it is. The really interesting thing is if you look years down the road, many, many times the most difficult child in your class is having the biggest impact. I mean, it's amazing how that tends to work. But what is it that's going to cause that child to love learning? What are you going to do? What are you going to find that's going to cause that child to have the light bulb turned on? Or what's going to cause the child that's really shy and quiet to be willing to raise their hand and answer questions? What are you going to do to promote in your classroom an environment where all the children think that you love them? One of the things that I used to do was I would write my students notes, and I would, not everybody every day, but I would put them in their desk. I know another teacher that had something called the desk fairy. In fact, it was Ty Fisher's wife. And she was having a problem in her classroom, particularly with little boys, no surprise, that their desks were just totally disorganized, neat, and uncluttered. Any of you have that problem? And so she instituted the desk fairy. Now, the desk fairy was this really ridiculous little plastic fairy that if you'd told me a fourth grade boy would want to find in his desk, I would have told you you were nuts. Okay, plastic fairy probably cost her 3 cents, you know? Well, the desk fairy would get put in the desk when you had the neatest desk, and you never knew when it was going to be there, and it was a really big deal. And so she got all these little boys to start wanting to clean their desks so that the desk fairy would be there in the morning. There was no prize associated with this. It was just a stupid plastic little desk fairy. But it was a really cool thing because she made it cool, okay? All these little things communicate to the children in a positive way that you care about them. The child that is, you know, struggling, not doing well, a lot of times just a note of encouragement. Johnny, I really appreciate the way, you know, you got those 5 words right on your test. They might have missed 15, but they got 5. But 5 is more than they've ever had. And see, we don't think that way. We think they only got 5 right. I can't believe this. What in the world did this child do? They didn't study. Okay, well, why would you want to study if you studied and you only got 5 right and your teacher still told you that you did poorly? No. Do I want them to get 100%? Absolutely. But do I see that they've gone a step in the right direction? Give them a note of encouragement. Let them know. Children don't all do things the same way. And so what works for one child may not work for another. And that's hard if you've got a class of 25 children. I know that. I spent a lot of years doing that. But you need to find out what turns the key for that child. Okay, one of the best things that I can tell you as an administrator as to how I know a teacher's doing is if I go stand in the playground and they don't know I'm there. Because the way the children talk about you all on the playground is the way I, as an administrator, used to know how you were doing. Because if they are excited by what you're teaching and they're talking about it, you're really doing a good job. But if they're out there going, oh, I don't want to go to Mrs. Detweiler's class, that is so boring, I need to take a look at myself and say, okay, what can I do to make this not boring? Children are honest, guys. They are the most honest creatures on earth. In fact, sometimes inappropriately honest, but they are honest. And we really can know how we're doing by the feedback that they give about us. If they're loving your classes, you're probably doing a great job. If they're talking in the hallways about, you know, Pompeii, another teacher, in fact, actually, it was the same teacher, Mrs. Fisher, she used to do the burning of Jerusalem. Okay, now, we had to get permission from the fire department to do this, but okay, that's all right. The children would build models. We'd go out in this parking lot, which we had to put like these sandbags around or something so that the fire department wouldn't get upset about it because we might burn down the building. And they would get to literally burn the buildings down. I'm not kidding you. My sons, who are now in college or out of college, still talk about that to this day. They can tell you every bit of history about it. Well, why can they? Because she did something that made an impression that they will never, ever, ever forget. Now, I know you can't do that with every lesson that you teach. I understand that. But you've got to come up with those kinds of things for many of the things that you do teach so that they will remember them, so they will be excited. My children want to do that with their own children. I mean, that, they want to have their children to have that experience. That is how you can have an impact on these children's lives. Now, I'm real into multisensory learning, the five learning gates, taste, touch, smell, sight, and hearing. The reason I am is what I said to you earlier. Children learn in all different ways. We have auditory learners, we have visual learners. I mean, all children learn differently. In a classroom, you're just not going to have a group of children who all get it the same way. There are some children, when I'm doing a history, when I'm trying to get history chronology into their head, that just singing the history song or just chanting the chants are never going to get it. I have to have them write out a timeline 5 or 10 times. There are other children that don't. And so in my classroom, not everybody does the same thing all the time. I know in today's society and culture, that's not real, you know, that's not the way things are. But I think it's important that we explain to our students everybody learns differently. And what I mean by that is, you know, Johnny may say to me, Mrs. Detweiler, that's not fair. Sarah doesn't have to write out her timeline 5 times. And, I understand that Sarah doesn't have to write out her timeline 5 times, but Sarah memorizes her timeline by just chanting it. She can get it that way. Now, you're going to do the chant at the beginning of the day, but when I send the other students back to the back of the classroom to keep chanting, you're going to go write it down because that's how you learn it better. And I try to explain to children that they need to understand and figure out how they learn best. I have had children before. They're my wiggly children is what I call them. Guys got wiggly children in your classrooms? You know, I've had a little boy. A teacher at Veritas who had this, I'm not even sure. It's one of those buzzer ball things, you know, the lights on it. And anyway, he had some children that were having a hard time memorizing a timeline. And so he got these children in a circle and would pass this ball around. When the buzzer went off, you had to give the date for whatever the chronology event was. And I watched some little boys who could have cared less about memorizing this timeline, who weren't getting it, suddenly they're getting 100% on their test just because of a silly ball that's being passed around. Now, some people might look at that and say, you know, they really just need to learn it this way. I've got to have everybody doing the same thing. And what I want to ask you is why? As adults, we don't learn the same way. As adults, none of us do the same things the same way. That's like a school administrator that wants teachers to do everything in the same way. I'm very artsy. You're going to see this in a minute. I have projects and paint and paper. And if you came into my classroom, I used to teach in a classroom anyway. If you would come into my classroom, you probably would have thought it was very chaotic. It was organized chaos, but that's just my personality. Kids really had fun, I promise you, and they learned. But there are other teachers who aren't like that. And so when I became an administrator, for me to expect everybody to do things the way I did it would have been unrealistic. God didn't wire them the same way. Well, guess what? God didn't wire those children the same way either. So you've got to find out what works for them. Well, when we learn, the other thing we have to realize is that in classical Christian education, one of the things we're wanting to make sure is that we've got great retention, okay? We want to have things that are repeatable, okay? When I look at, people often say, how do you choose what goes into your catalog? Well, there are a couple of criteria, but one of the biggest criteria that I have for what goes in the catalog is it something, particularly in grammar school, that is repeatable? Meaning, can I have one teacher do it 1 year and have a teacher 3 years later still reviewing the material? Okay, because if I can't do that, then it's not something that I'm particularly interested in using. And the reason is because in the grammar stage, we are trying to load the hard drive. That's what my husband calls it, and that's really what it is. We're trying to give them all the information that they need for the rest of their lives to kind of take and then fly. It's got to be something that teachers can repeat. And so we need to find interesting ways to do it. because it can get really boring if you do the same thing in the same way over and over again. I encourage you as teachers to come together as a faculty, teachers that teach the same discipline, and talk about how you're all going to do it. Do the same thing, but do it in a little bit of a different way so that it's not boring to the children. Encourage you to do that. Well, one of the things that I hear from teachers is, that's just not my thing. I'm just not creative. I don't know how to do that. It's just not who I am. You need to understand, you are, everybody's creative. God's made us all creative. You may be creative in a different way than I'm creative. It might be that I know a kindergarten teacher that is one of the most mild-mannered, quiet teachers I've ever met. She barely talks like this in her classroom. She's the best kindergarten teacher that I know. She's Veritas Academy's kindergarten teacher, Jackie Lake, and if all of my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, she won't be teaching by then, could have had her, I would have been happy. But this woman is the most mild-mannered. She has this big old chair that she sits in. A pin could drop in her classroom, guys, and you could hear it because the children are just, it's just serene in her classroom. It would drive me crazy to teach like that, but it's incredibly wonderful. That's what I mean. The way she does things, you don't walk into her classroom and see bombshells going off and, you know, things. You walk into my classroom, you're going to see things hanging from ceilings and classical music in the background, and it's just very, very different. But her classroom's incredible. Find out what makes you tick. What is the thing that you love? You know, what is the thing, you know, I see a number of male teachers out there. And, you know, what is it? Are you interested in hunting, fishing, something like that? Just because you think that's what my interest is, that's not what I'm teaching. That doesn't mean you can't weave that into your personality of your classroom and make the students interested in it. Those students need to see that you're interested and motivated by something, and there's something that you have a passion for. When children see as adults, it's always a joke at my household. Mom always has a book, and I walk around with books. It's a rare thing that I don't have a book in my purse, under my arm, and my children know that. They know I love to read. Motivates them to do those things. And so that's what you have to do also. The other thing is failure to prepare. You know, I hate to say that, but it's true. One of the reasons that we don't get these fun things done is because we think about it the night before. One of the things I always encourage teachers to do is plan your entire year out before the school year begins. Plan every project you're going to do for the entire year. And here's why. There are these wonderful things called parent volunteers. But what ends up happening is a couple of things. One, parents don't know what to do, so sometimes they do things you wish they didn't do. A. B, they stand around with nothing to do because we can't figure out because we didn't prepare in order to give them something to do when they could have been really helpful to us. All teachers are overworked and underpaid. That's just the way it is. You need to take advantage of the help you can get. So what I always do, prepare every single project. Know what it is that you want to do. Map it out. There are these things called open house nights at the beginning of the year. How many of you all have an open house night at your school? Okay. Parents come into your classroom. You give your nice beginning of the year spiel with a happy smile on your face. Parents are real captivated that night. Guys, have a sign-up sheet. I have folders, yellow envelopes with the projects in them for the entire year with a calendar where they're going to be. By the end of the evening, I have handed out every single project. I have a parent that has volunteered to take that responsibility on. I don't have to collect 25 shoe boxes. Mrs. Jones is going to collect 25 shoe boxes. And not only that, but I've gotten her to sign up on the calendar. She's going to be there on April 26th at 3 o'clock to do that project with me. So all I have to do is worry about the teaching portion of it. She's going to come with everything. I know this works. I did it for a lot of years. You will make your life easier. Figure out all these projects and have it I don't know how, it depends on the school. The other thing is, I'll just tell you financially, it's a great thing. Most parents end up just donating the materials. If they can't, I always have checked with the principal at the beginning to find out how they want reimbursements done, so that if somebody doesn't have the financial means, that they can still volunteer and be part of it. Not only that, what's really interesting is when you get parents to the project always ends up being better, and here's why. When they're concentrating on three things instead of you concentrating on a whole day, I have had projects go from nothing to incredible because the mom will call me up and say, you know, would you mind if I added this little bit of extra? No, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful. I'm real clear. We have an hour and a half to do this. It's got to fit within that. You need to give the parameters. You need to be real clear. But take advantage of parents. They are wonderful means to get things done. That kind of goes into the lack of energy. If we don't do these kind of things, we're going to wear ourselves out. You know, it's always, we all start off the beginning of the year, at least this is how I was. I had all these great things going at the beginning of the year. Christmas time would come along and I'd be like, okay, I'm barely making, I'm going to get up today, I'm going to get through the day. You know, by April and May, you're just barely making it. Take advantage of any help that you can get. You need to do that. Okay, well, I'm going to go through some examples here of some projects just to give you some ideas of things that we've done in the past. We read the book Pinocchio in second grade. This is a marionette project that the children do for Pinocchio. And then sometimes each student will retell the story of Pinocchio with his marionette. Okay, they told me this was going to move. Let's see. Sorry, guys. Julie, are you here? never mind. We got it. Okay. This is from Old Testament, Ancient Egypt. It's a lap books. I love lap books. Lap books, I'm going to give a short explanation of a lap book. Basically, they're kind of like scrapbooking is the easiest way. But you take things and put them into a book so that students can keep them. One of the things that I found is that when you do things well with students, meaning I always kept frames that students' artwork was displayed either in my classroom, and I'm talking about nice frames. AC Moore, places like that, they'll put them on sale. Go buy 20 frames. You can pop things in and out. It's amazing. When students know that you appreciate their work and are going to take the time to display it in a really nice way, they put more into it, and it doesn't become meaningless. And so these are lap books, and the students would put them together, and by at the end of the year, all their material for the year that they had done for their Old Testament and Ancient Egypt card was in a book that they could then keep for good. I love doing meals. This was from Old Testament, Ancient Egypt, and Egyptian collar. For every year, we always did a big feast, an Egyptian feast, a Greek feast, a medieval feast, and would do all these really fun days. I think having one day where you spend the entire day related to what you're studying, whether it's in history or literature, whatever it might be, and having that be a big day for your school. Sometimes it's fun to have all the school do, everybody just take one day, and each classroom does their own thing. But the children make costumes, they make their own costumes. And it's just a really big deal. And yes, the teachers do dress up, which is really fun. But that's a fun thing to do. The other thing is, and you can see these sarcophaguses out in our booth, but the way your classroom feels, how the setting of your classroom is really, really important. If you look at the classrooms at Veritas Academy, for instance, and some other schools we've been involved in, each of the doorways is depicted in the time period that we're studying for the year. So these actually have been in a second grade classroom at different times in order to set the depiction of the time period. And that's another thing, a great thing to do over the summer is to have parents go in and redo classrooms. The other thing I've done is when we've done Narnia, we've turned the entire classroom overnight. I had a team appearance come in, and they turned it. They had a wardrobe that was entirely set up. We held the students at the beginning of the school day, at the beginning of the day, and they all got to go in through the wardrobe, through old fur coats, and they walked in, and it was a winter wonderland. Overnight, parents, and they worked literally all night. They turned this thing into something that, I mean, it could have been on a movie set. It was unbelievable. The children will never forget that. They will never forget that for the rest of their lives. This is a cat sarcophagus that some children made from Old Testament, ancient Egypt. Okay, hats. Kids, young children love hats. This is, you can tell I taught Egypt, but this is an early New Kingdom hat, and they made those for one of the history cards they were studying. Once again, when studying Tutankhamun, they did on papyrus a painting of Tutankhamun. And that was from the unification of Upper and Lower Egypt. And I'm not sure which card that was for. That was from New Testament Greece and Rome, the fall of Israel and Judah. They made Assyrian helmets. There are some wonderful things. I like to set up centers in classrooms. And one of the things that I love, there are lots of these great kits out there. This one's on Thomas Edison. That one is an Egyptian one on wrapped on mummies. And I don't like downtime in classrooms. I always like there to be extras for students to have to do. And so I'll change centers in the back of my room and setting up things like this that they can go do. There's a whole set of cards that comes with it, a study. And then I'll actually have them write a paper after they've each gone through the process of doing it. That's a paddle doll from Egypt from a book that they read. A relief map. I love salt relief maps. They're great. Touch it, feel it, get to put it. I think there's a teacher in here. I don't know if Jonathan Daughtry's in here. He does it with cake for one of his classes, and it's very, very cool. This is a very, very large map that the students assemble. And once again, I think maps are real important for students to see things on. This is the tabernacle that they constructed. Each of the students did that. And that is actually a pretty large Ark of the Covenant that they made. That's from Charlotte's Web. It's a puppet, and then each of the students has to use the puppet to tell a story. From a mask, and we do Greek plays and use the mask for that. If you, one of the ideas that you can get, there was a booklet in your handout here, this reading booklet. Evan Moore very kindly gave us these. And one of the things that I really like in here, and I use things like this to get ideas, but it's on page 12, what a skunk needs to do. Now, it's not necessarily that this is the play I would use, but take the ideas from here and apply it to something that you're studying. It's a good thing to do. This is Percival. Goes with our phonics program. We like to have Percival in our classroom. And it, when five-year-olds walk in and see Percival standing there on the very first day of school, they want to know why. And it's a real fun way to enter into what we're going to talk about. When we study Western expansion, once again, we make a covered wagon. That's a Charlotte's Web pig. And there's a first grade doorway. You can see Percival's castle. There's second grade, Old Testament, ancient Egypt. Third grade, Greece, the columns. Fourth grade, gargoyles. Those are always fun. Fifth grade is a log cabin. And that's it. Now, if you take the other handout that you have in here, the one, and you turn to the second page, there's something called a wonder-commer. And this is really fun. A wonder-commer was known as a cabinet of curiosities, a cabinet of wonder, and was an encyclopedic collection of genuine natural history, geology, and ethnic artifacts. The term cabinet originally meant a room, not a piece of furniture. Anyway, this is just something that you can use for what you're studying, and it's a way to make it fun. Students, instead of just go write a report, this is a fun way to have them write a report that makes it interesting. That's one of the things I'm always looking for. What is a way that I can take something and turn it into something fun and interesting for them? You can do a whole Latin word study. I love integration. Anytime I can integrate anything, somebody always says, how do you get all these disciplines done plus do all this fun stuff? There's only one way to do it, guys, and that's to integrate, okay? You cannot write, you know, a two-paragraph thing for Shirley Grammar, then write a history paper, then write an IEW exercise, then et cetera. You get the idea. There's no way you can get that all done. Or if you do, it's not going to be done well, okay? And I'd rather have one writing exercise done very, very well where the students have been able to correct it and write a rough draft, rewrite it. So if you're in a self-contained classroom, that's real easy. You can decide what you're doing. But if you're not, if you have different teachers teaching different disciplines, I encourage you to get with the other faculty members. You know, it might be that you have somebody that teaches history and somebody that teaches grammar. Well, there's absolutely no reason that you as a grammar teacher can't go find out what they're studying. They're studying Alfred the Great, let's say. Well, they can write their IEW or Shirley or whatever it is you use for grammar. They can write their paper in grammar on what they need to be doing in history, and then you can give it two grades. You can give them a grade for grammar, and the history teacher can give them the grade that they need for history. But that way, it's important, I think, that children see that it's not just what they write, but how they write it. And it lets them see that all these disciplines are interconnected. You know, you don't want them to think that they go from history class to grammar class, and in history class they can check, it doesn't matter how they spell, how they use grammar, they can just kind of check their, you know, grammar hats at the door. And so getting interconnected with teachers is very important. Sounds complicated, it's really not, particularly if you all just plan together. Well, I've said a lot of things here and jumped around quite a bit, but what I think we need to realize in all of this is you all are inspiring the next generation. You are the ones that are taking these children and really impacting them as to whether or not you've instilled a love of learning. Like I said, I'd rather have a child who loved learning and wasn't, can't believe I'm going to say this, and wasn't classically educated than a classically educated child who didn't love learning. And here's why. It's what I said at the beginning. They can be classically educated, and they can come out with all this knowledge and with all their facts. But if they are not, if they don't have an absolute wonder for what God's created around them, an absolute wonder for what God wants them to do, a love of learning to where they're passionate and they want to read books, they can't wait to find out what's going to happen next, they're just going to leave our schools and quit. We don't want that. We want students that are going to go out and change the world. We want students that are going to impact the world for Christ. And those students are the ones who are going to be the next engineers, who have wonder and excitement in their minds, that are going to be the next doctors, that are going to be the next mothers of children that hopefully they'll want to give their own children classical Christian educations. You know, it's really exciting. I'm kind of at that next phase in life, and you look back, and I can tell you, you know how you did by what your children love. It's one of those things. It's smack in your face. You know how you did as a parent by what your children love. Well, you know how you did as a teacher by what your students love. You know, do they still just want to race home and play those video games? Or have you caused them to want to go read that book that you've given them to read? Have you caused them to want to, you know, say, Mom, oh, you know, my teacher told me that there's an exhibit that's going to be at the museum this week. Do you think we could go there this weekend? I can't tell you how wonderful it is to get a phone call from a parent that goes something like this. I can't believe this. My son, who has not cared about anything but basketball, asked me if we could go to the symphony this weekend. The symphony. Okay. That parent would have done anything for that teacher. That parent would have done anything for that school. Let me explain that to you. That's actually a true story. The sad thing about this story is that the young man actually was killed in a car accident when he was in high school. But he's really, that young man and that story have impacted a lot of people. But when I got that phone call from that parent, it was like, I can't believe this. My son, who doesn't care anything about basketball, wants to go to the symphony. And he got this from a teacher who played classical music all the time. And this teacher, his name's Michael Eatman. Some of you may know him. He's one of the best teachers you'll ever meet. And he would walk around the room and he would just say things like, man, doesn't that sound like drums beating on the ground? There must have been a tribe racing in. I mean, he made music come, and he wasn't even a musician. I mean, he loved music, but that wasn't what his background was. But he had these boys listening to these things, and you'd hear these kids talking about classical music in ways that was just amazing. Yeah, I'm serious. Students going home saying, can we go buy Pachelbel's Canon and D? I mean, I'm talking about boys who were listening to, you know, things you might not want your children to listen to, and playing basketball all the time, and they're wanting to listen to Pachelbel's Canon and D. We can do this. It's a big responsibility, but we can change the lives of these children to make them love learning and impact a future generations. Well, I have just a few minutes, and I'm going to open it up to questions. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes. The advice I'd give to first-year teachers is find teachers in your school who have been teaching for a while, and don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, I look back to my first-year teaching, and I can't believe they paid me. I mean, seriously, when I look back now, I think somebody paid me to, you know, do that. It's just amazing. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And the other thing is, particularly if you're teaching older students, you know, like fourth grade and above, don't be afraid to say you made a mistake. Kids know when you made a mistake. I mean, I can remember being in the middle of a lesson going, guys, I'm sorry, this is just not working. Put your books down, we're going to go on to the next thing, and I'll try to figure something out tomorrow. But admit it. Children, you know, we don't like it when children don't admit things. Why should we be any different? Tell them you made a mistake. Tell them you have a bad lesson. Sorry, guys, this didn't work. It'll go a long way with them. It really will. Any other questions? Yes. Okay. I should have held some of these up. These are art things where it gives you everything in a kit to know what to do. Draw and write. Draw and write. These are wonderful. Absolutely. They've got lots of historical things, but the students draw things and write about them. Go on. The internet is a great free place, too. It is amazing what you can find on the internet today. You know, type in creative ideas for teaching about Columbus, and you'll get 300 pages of things that you could possibly find. The other thing is, I think you need faculty meetings that deal with nothing but, you know, spend an hour where, hey, I've got to teach about the Crusades this week. Can everybody help me come up with ideas? You know, if you can't do it at a faculty meeting, you know, find five teachers that you can email back and forth with. You know, hey, can you help me come up with an idea for this? Because I get stuck. I mean, I can tell you sometimes I think of myself as pretty creative, but I get in these places where I go, gee, I can't come up with anything that would be fun about this. So that would be another thing to do. Yes. For Spanish, if you'll stop by the booth afterwards, I have one that I can give you. We actually teach Spanish, but online, and I have lots of resources, but couldn't tell you off the top of my head what they are, but would be happy to. Yes. Yeah. I don't have a resource for that. The thing I would tell you is just to get lots of books and find things, you know, that you might want done. Once again, parents normally have done that for us. You know, the other thing is go to your, if you're in a small school, find out who's into drama. Anybody who's ever worked on a, all this is a set. So anybody that's ever worked on a set could help you with that. The other thing is, guys, some of the best resources I can tell you are refrigerator boxes. You want to make things fun. You want to have a day. Boxcar children, for instance. We make a train out of refrigerator boxes. It is so much fun. Refrigerator boxes were made for teachers. I mean, they just were. They were. Refrigerator boxes and tempera paint, and you are good. The kids can have fun. They'll come up with something. So, any other questions? Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes, in the back. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. I can. I think we need to see projects as curriculum. And what I mean by that is you need to teach through a project. That's what I was kind of implying when I said, let the parents do the busy work. For instance, when you saw Tutankhamun's mask, for instance, I have the children working on that while I'm actually reading a story about Tutankhamun. Projects are only, you know, if you don't teach through a project, they're not any more than an art activity, a craft activity. You know, you've got to teach through them. You know, when I do the Greek mask, we talk the whole time we're doing that. Okay, what would the eye expressions, why did they have the eyes openings like they did? Why were they slanted the way they were? Well, they were slanted the way they were so that you could only see part of the eye because of what the Greeks were trying to portray. Why do some Greek masks have no hair? Why do some have curly hair? What were they trying to portray in that? So as you're doing these things, you need to teach through them. The other thing I'd tell you is a lot of times classroom management comes into play there. You know, you need to train the children at the beginning of the year how to set up for a project and how to clean up for a project. So if you're painting, I always have somebody that's in charge, you know, rotate through your little classroom helper things. Even 5th and 6th graders, 7th, 8th graders can do this too. But somebody's in charge of picking up the trash afterwards. Somebody's in charge of cleaning the paintbrushes. Somebody's, because otherwise you're going to be there till 9 o'clock at night. So classroom management really comes into play in that. And the other thing is I always, if I have a long-term project that I'm working on, I have them set up. We would have big tables in the back of the room, and some of this is limited by your classroom settings and that kind of thing. I understand that. But I let the students work quietly on them when they're done with their other work. So those would be a couple comments. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you all for coming, and hope that was helpful.